It's the 9 to noon show, third hour of the programme with myself, Donal Kavanagh, standing in for Greg on the programme today, here tomorrow as well, and then Greg's back next week. Caller asks, why can't we develop our own Irish history? Why do we keep telling Irish history from an English perspective? There was no famine in Ireland from 1945 to 1947. That's an English title for this time to cover up what was done. We need to develop our own Irish name for this period that is more accurate to what actually happened here. Well, I would respectfully suggest we do have our own name for that. It's called, in many areas, An Gcuirt Amhair, the Great Hunger. And perhaps the Great Hunger is a far more accurate description of what happened than calling it the famine. But I think famine is the word that is used. And I think when you talk about the context of famine in the context of Ireland in the 19th century, I think people understand what it means. I think people understand that there's a fundamental difference between famine in the context that we talk about it in the 19th century in Ireland and famine in the context that we talk about, say, in places like Ethiopia or Somalia and other parts of Africa. And I think there is an understanding of that. Now, we're going to move to a discussion with Senator Pauline O'Reilly, who is the chair of the Green Party. She's joining us on Zoom. Senator O'Reilly, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
The Electoral Commission is discussing a number of issues. It's looking at the potential scrapping of by-elections, lowering the voting age, and also an issue that crops up time and again during election debates is the potential limiting of posters. And that's an issue in particular that you have taken a great interest in.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm delighted to come on today primarily to talk about this scourge that many people would say is election posters, but others would say, you know, it's part of our democracy that you know who's running. And so in light of both of those things, I brought forward a bill last year which would limit election posters. And what the government did, we couldn't get full support, but what we did do is get support that it would go to an electoral commission, which the Green Party had set up when we went into government, with support from our government partners. And that's looking, as you said, at a number of issues around enhancing democracy in Ireland. But particularly on this issue of election posters, if we look at 2014, for instance, when the local elections were running in 2014, there were 600,000 plastic posters across the country. That's enough to fill 23 folk parks. So that's quite significant from a waste point of view. But it's also, it creates issues around safety. A lot of these posters, they hide road signs or they get in the way, they fall down, they're too low. And there are all kinds of regulations to say how high they should be. But from personal experience, having been involved in elections, having been a councillor myself and running in Dáil election, I know that there are many who, you know, they slip or people don't put them up high enough and so on and so forth. So look, what I really wanted to do, it was to look at what's done in other countries, what works in other countries and what could we do here. And if we have designated areas where everybody gets the same amount of space in a designated area, and then people can see not just their face, but actually also what they stand for, and they can make their decision on that basis, I think that that's the fairest thing. Because one of the issues is that if you're running for the first time in an election and everybody else has posters up and you don't have posters up, you really stand absolutely zero chance of getting elected. And it's something for us in the Green Party, you know, we've had to grapple with, because obviously we don't want plastic posters, but we also want to make sure that we get some real policy changes over the line, like, you know, rural public transport, like solar panels on school buildings and so on. You have to be in government to do that. And so you have to get elected. So it's about creating a level playing field. That's what my bill is about. And hopefully the Electoral Commission will come to the same conclusion.
If the Electoral Commission comes to that conclusion, what status does its findings have? Is it a recommendation to the minister? Is it an instruction to the minister to pass legislation? Effectively, can the Electoral Commission tell the minister what to do? Or is the Electoral Commission merely advising the minister on what to do?
Well, the Electoral Commission is advising, but the Electoral Commission will do consultations. And what we've always seen in this country is that the public are ahead of politicians. And so a number of times where politicians have been slow in introducing change, you have either these kinds of commissions, this kind of research that really looks at public opinion, and then the politicians move. And one of the challenges I had when I introduced this bill in the Senate last year was that pretty much across the board, the other political parties were not hugely in favour. Some, I have to say, some members of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were in favour, some weren't. But Sinn Féin and the Labour Party, for instance, were not in favour. So in order to make them move to a position, I think that we have to have this electoral commission piece of work and then say, you know, do you stand over it or do you not? And put it up to politicians, put it up to the political parties. You know, here's what the public are saying. Are you going to get on board? Or are you not going to get on board?
And you do believe that your belief is reflecting a belief that's out there in the general public? Because we all want to think, obviously, that the public agrees with us. I mean, if from your own discussions with people, of course, you know, you do genuinely believe that that is the feeling out there among the population.
I do believe it is. I think people get annoyed by the amount that are put up. And I mean, we only have to look at what some tidy towns groups do, and they take it upon themselves to ban it in certain towns. And like there are issues with that, because, of course, if one politician happens to be really well known in that town, they then get an electoral advantage because nobody else has their posters up. So I think the way to address it is to have a designated place and for the local authorities to decide what those designated places are, because we can't have, and I mean, I'm in the west of Ireland as well, we can't have people from the east of Ireland making a decision about where to put up these designated areas in local communities. Like, it has to make sense.
But as someone in a predominantly rural area, you will understand that it's one thing to talk about a designated place if you're in the middle of Paris or the middle of Berlin or the middle of London or whatever. Absolutely, you can have a designated place and people will see it. But if you have people living in a rural area of Donegal or a rural area of Mayo or a rural area of Galway, the reality is if you could have a designated place in Buncrana, you could have a designated place in Castlebar, a designated place in Portumna, but people living in a rural area 10 miles away may never see it. And immediately the local candidates are going to say, this is putting us at a huge disadvantage.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of, you know, the feedback that I was receiving speaking to councillors. And this is why I believe the piece that I put into my legislation, which wasn't in previous kinds of, you know, motions that people had put forward, was that you would actually have a consultation locally about it. Like, there's no one size fits all. It's not going to be perfect, but we have to make a decision. Do we want this 600,000, which will probably go up to 1 million posters next time, or do we want to do something about it? And even in an urban area, there are still issues around, well, you know, people go to the Lidl or the Aldi on this side of town and not, you know, and not over the other side of town. So there's all those kinds of issues. So I think particularly for rural areas, you may need to look at them in, you know, in like along a road, for instance, that a lot of people travel. And I mean, I'm in my constituency, very rural in Connemara as well. So there's the exact same issues across Connemara, Mayo, Donegal, as you say, and I'm trying to take that into account. But I think, look, it's interesting to have the conversation to see what people think, and people do have various views on it.
Absolutely.
But now's the time to have that conversation, now that people really care about, which we all do, about the environment, about plastic pollution, and about safety on our roads as well.
The other side of that discussion is, obviously, I work in the media. I work predominantly in the newsroom, and we will have debates, we'll have regular news stories, we'll have candidate profiles, we'll be doing a lot on air before any election. Our colleagues in Galway Bay FM will be doing exactly the same. Our local papers will do great work in terms of profiling candidates and putting up the pictures, and there'll be adverts there. And we'd all like to think in the media that, yeah, people can listen to us and read the papers and they'll get an overview of all the candidates, and it'll be presented in as professional and encompassing a way as we possibly can. The reality is that people are not going to hear every candidate profile on radio. People are not going to read every candidate profile in a newspaper, and people's first and potentially primary encounter as such with candidates is going to be the fact that they're going to see the candidate's face on a poll with vote one, and then maybe a 2, 3, 4 in order of your choice from your running mates. But, you know, that's what they're going to see. And especially these days, when the photograph is also on the ballot paper, and any candidate worth their salt and party worth their salt is going to make sure that the photo on the ballot paper is the same photo as the photo that's on the poster. So the argument is going to come back to that, you know, you know, people may not listen to radio, people may not read the papers, people may not be, you know, canvassed in their home by everybody, but people are going to see the posters that are on the pole just down the road.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important. And we all do it ourselves. We put up the posters. I think posters are an important part. And that's why I think striking that balance and having designated areas is probably the best way to go about it. And why I wasn't in favour of just banning it altogether. But at the same time, like, I definitely know people say, oh, I've seen her face, I'm going to vote for her. And they actually don't have no idea what the person stands for. So, you know, that's the downside to somebody just seeing your face over and over again. I think they do have to know what you stand for. But I mean, one good thing about, you know, radio numbers are still high. Like, you know, people might have said in the past, oh, radio is going to die out. Actually, that the statistics show the complete opposite. So that's a really good thing. And absolutely, the debates running up to elections are really, really important. But there's a lot happens online now as well.
Yep.
And I think it's all part of it. And, you know, I think there's a lot that needs to happen in the education system as well about really people informing themselves around election time. But we're all busy. And I certainly know before I got involved in politics, I'm not from a political family. I had limited knowledge of who was running, even with all the posters. So, you know, do they work? They work to an extent, but I think we need to look now at changing that and changing how we do it.
The other two issues that are being looked at briefly by the Electoral Commission are the potential lowering of the voting age to 16 and an interesting one. It already exists in a European context, but the scrapping of by-elections and the replacement of by-elections with an alternate list where another person would be listed. Now, I know in local authorities, there's certainly a convention in Donegal County Council. I know it's the same in many councils down the country that if someone passes away or retires or whatever reason leaves Donegal County Council, the convention is that their party or their grouping will nominate a replacement and that person will be, a vote will have to take place in the chamber. But the convention and the agreed convention between all the parties is that that person will not be opposed and they will come in. So we've had several instances of that. So you don't have by-elections for the local elections. You don't have by-elections for the European elections because that's done in the list system. Do you think the list system would work for Dáil Éireann?
I think absolutely. I mean, it's an absolute, you know, it's so expensive for the country to run an election. And it just makes no sense that when somebody decides to leave, that there's a by-election. Now, the way it works in the council is absolutely, as you've said, under the law, you can co-opt somebody in. Doesn't have to be from your party, but the party has to nominate somebody.
Yeah.
And it's usually a case that, you know, it's a tick box exercise then after that. But I think there's a downside to that, and that is that, you know, in advance, nobody knows who that person might be. Whereas if you look at the European elections, you have to have 5 alternates, and you can't run for election unless you have those 5 alternates, and they're already listed. They're sent through, and so anybody can find out who those alternates are. And so, for instance, we did have an MEP in our area in Midlands Northwest, who decided to run for Dáil Éireann, and so a few months after the yep. European election, they got their seat in Dáil Éireann and then somebody else is put in their place. And that's the person at the top of the list. And it goes down. And actually, I think it was a few people down the list mm-hmm. who actually became the MEP in the end. But if Ireland was to run another by-election, a European by-election, it would just be crazy. It doesn't make any sense. So I think I'm hopeful that's what the commission will come back with, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it actually happened twice in this constituency because Sinn Féin, Matt Carthy went to the Dáil and he was replaced.
Right.
And then Ruaidh McGuinness became EU commissioner. So she was replaced by Colm Markey. So it has actually happened twice.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can see how frequently it could happen. But the same for Dáil Éireann, you know, it could happen in reverse. It could be the European elections are before the Dáil elections, so you might have people who are TDs mm-hmm. next year running for the European elections. And what happens then to their seat? Are the people of Donegal or wherever, are they left then without a TD until such time as a by-election is called? Sometimes that can be 5 months down the line. And it certainly was in Dublin Bay South. They were left for a really long time without an alternate TD, which is really deeply unfair to them. It was nearly 6 months.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens there. But I think it's interesting to see, you know, the kind of changes that I think they're going to come forward with. And then, of course, the other one is lowering the voting age, which, I mean, it's Green Party policy. We tried our best, but didn't get it into the programme for government. And I think this is the best next alternative to really research it and see would it work. It's worked in other countries, Scotland, Wales. If we want young people to be really engaged in politics, they have to feel that they have a voice and they have a say. But one thing to remember is that what we have introduced is that you can now pre-register from the age of 16. So you can get your name on the register. So as the day you turn 18, you'll be able to vote. And I think that's a really good advancement.
Senator Pauline O'Reilly, I almost promoted you there. thanks very much indeed for joining us, Senator. And we look forward to seeing the determinations of the Electoral Commission and to see what happens when the government gets its hands on them, whether they'll just take the recommendations or... we may not see the changes, I suspect, before the European local elections next year. Given the pace at which we will see the recommendations, but I doubt we'll see legislation. I mean, we're talking the first or second week of May next year, aren't we? It'll be the second week of June.
About the 7th of June.
For the local and European. So, I mean, we won't see the changes before then. But another general election, perhaps late 24, certainly by early 25. So we'll see what happens then. In the meantime, Senator Pauline O'Reilly, thank you very much indeed. Just a couple of your comments and requests before we go any further. Bridget McLaughlin is in Buncrana Community Hospital and she's 99 today. Have a fabulous day, Bridget. That's from your brother Joe and your sister Susan. That's a very happy birthday indeed to Bridget. We spoke earlier to Liam and Helen from the Farmers Alliance. Caller says, delighted to hear them. Time the established parties realised they're not in touch with real people, nor are they representing the real people on real issues. I think Ireland is going to see a massive change after the next local and general elections. Well, the next local elections will be in early June of next year, and the next general election must be by, I think, February 2025. We're probably talking the autumn of 2024. Caller says, regarding the Farmers Party interview, all our government ministers are under the thumb of Europe, the EU, but Europe as a union is predestined to fall, just like the great Roman Empire, and not too far in the future either. That's from Mary. Wondering what the progress on the RTE Ryan Tuberty controversy is. Do the powers that be think that by suddenly keeping very quiet it's going to go away? No way. Well, I mean, we saw on the papers this morning that RTE potentially are facing a deficit of 40 million euro. So, you know, I think RTE's problems right at this point in time go way beyond Ryan Tuberty. Connor says, Dr. Joe Kelly is very interesting. Could his talks be available on podcasts like Spotify? Good History Podcast would have a good following. It's an interesting point. I will remind you, obviously, this entire programme will be podcast on the Highland Radio website after the show finishes. And you can watch it back. In fact, on YouTube, you can watch it back immediately. You can go onto YouTube, onto Highland Radio Ireland, go on to Thursday's show, and it is logged on YouTube afterwards. It stays there and you can watch back and you can watch Dr. Joe Kelly's piece. And I agree, he's always fascinating and I certainly would listen to a podcast with Joe Kelly on it. The Irish people controlled by the Catholic Church who were in cahoots with the British establishment who subdued us and impoverished us. Remember the response of the Catholic Church to the hunger of 45 to 51 was to send in the Jesuits to ensure we died good Catholics. Now, in fairness, Dr. Joe did point out that during that upheaval in Clonhilly and Gwydor, it was the Catholic priests at the time who were the champions of the tenants and the champions of the local people. And indeed, it was their interventions that saw an end to that sort of sheep war conflict in Gwydor and Clonhilly. So I think certainly, and you know, the caller makes a valid point in terms of some of the activities and some of what happened. But I think in fairness, and Dr. Joe did make the point that there was a lot of good done by the Catholic clergy for the tenants and the local people at that time. Now, let's change tack completely. Italy has put a windfall tax on banks because they say profiteering from interest rate increases. Irish banks made 4 billion euro profit last year, trebling their profits from the year before. Banks haven't passed on rate increases for savings, but they have for mortgage rates. Now, Eric Nelligan is an ANTHU representative, and the question he's been posing on social media is, should Ireland follow suit? Eric, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure, Eric. And it's an interesting point, the point you make. Now, Italy has slightly rolled back on what it initially intended to do, but the intention is still there. You believe there should be a conversation in Dáil Éireann and at cabinet level?
Yes, I do. As a principle, the government and the state have agreed that in the event of windfall benefits and windfall, if certain companies, through their actions that are linked to consumers, gain windfall or gain massive profits, as we see in the energy sector at the moment, the government have agreed that windfall taxes, as a principle, can be implemented. So we saw that. Look, everyone listening here knows how much your gas and electricity and your solid fuel has increased over the last 2 years. And we see that the government, albeit very, very slowly, are putting through legislation that will allow windfall taxes to come through. Aim to actually put through a bill, and the government amended that to bring forward their own one. So as a matter of principle, it's there. So now what we see is, as you mentioned in the introduction, banks are making super profits off the back of the ECB rate rises over the last 12 months or so. So what we know is that the ECB has increased the rates of about 3% or so over the last year. Anyone with a variable or a tracker mortgage definitely knows what we're talking about. Anyone with a fixed mortgage in the not too distant future, you will be hitting, when your fixed mortgage expires, you will be coming up to increased rates. So we've seen the interest rates for mortgage increasing, but we have not seen the interest rates for savers increasing. In fact, out of only 7%, Ireland's the lowest in the EU, only 7% of the interest rate hikes have been passed on to savers, while our neighbours across the water in the UK have passed 42% of their interest rate hikes onto savers. So banks are making super profits, and they're making super profits off the back of customers. And in this situation like that, I personally think, and A2 personally think, that it is right and just that if the banks aren't going to make life better for their customers, if they're not going to pass on some of the justifiable savings that should be going to the customers, if they're not prepared to do that, what is wrong with taxing them or getting some temporary levy to encourage them to change? As you mentioned in your introduction, Italy are planning to do something. They've changed slightly what they were planning to do. Initially, it was 40% of any super levies or any super profits. Yeah. Now they have adjusted it to make it 0.1% of their assets. So just for your listeners' knowledge, and when I did a quick Google search this morning, what that means is AIB have assets of 140 billion. So if you take 0.1% of 140 billion, you get an idea of the amount of profits that we could get if we followed a similar path to Italy.
Now, I don't know off the top of my head what the figures are, but the government is a shareholder effectively in many of the banks and a significant, if not a majority, shareholder in at least one of them at the moment. So, you know, there's an argument that says, you know, the government is going to be benefiting from these windfall profits on the basis that the government are a significant shareholder in the banks. And do you think that's in some way tempering the actual government attitude? Because if the government takes money away from the bank's profits to give it to consumers, in effect, it's taking money away from itself.
That's true. But can I ask you, would you prefer if the bank gave you, just say, 100 quid, or if the bank gave the government 100 quid on your behalf? I'm sure most people
absolutely. Absolutely. And like, as a taxpayer in this country, I mean, I gave a fair bit of money, I think, to the banks over the years when they were bailed out, etc. And as a result of the resulting financial crash, like many people, I saw my wage drop significantly, as did many people, because of the money that was given to the banks. So, I mean, you know, I and many others would have this feeling in the back of our minds that go, oi, you owe us.
Yeah, well, no, look, you're right. And look, AIM2 is about economic justice, about justice for people. And what we're seeing here is the money, like, yes, you are correct. The government has a stakeholder in a large number of banks. Now, however, the government have always said that they don't want to get involved in the running of the bank because they don't want to see it become a nationalised state bank. So while the state has owned the percentage of the banks, and we are selling off the stake every in dribs and drabs and a couple of percent here and there over the last number of years, the government doesn't. So we let the banks run themselves, and we just take a portion of whatever our entitlements or dividend is. But I suppose it's a cost of living. We've mentioned cost of living. We've talked about how the Irish taxpayer bailed out the banks 15 years ago, and we are still paying. We're paying for it now, you and I. Our children will be paying for it when they get to the age of paying tax. And there's a good chance some of our grandchildren could be paying for it. So in AIM 2, what we hope is just, we need to push a policy of economic justice. And for me, these are super profits. So I am not, I want to make this clear, AIM 2 and I, we are not in a position to tax people that do well in their own business. So if you own a small business or an SME, and if you're doing well, then you should be entitled to that. But what we're seeing here is the banks are getting benefit from the ECB. They're upping the rates for the mortgage holders. They're not upping the rates for the savers. So if the bank upped the rates for the savers, or all the people out there who have savings in the banks, well then we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. But what they're doing is they're having their cake and they're eating it. And for me, that's not right. That's wrong. And Italy did the right idea, and the banks will probably react to this. Sometimes you have to meet fire with fire. You have to be strong in your opposition to people that are profiteering. And if you don't, if you stand meekly back and if you say, oh, fire away, banks, do what you want, do you think the bankers will keep the profits for their own company, or will they pass them on to savers? We've seen they haven't passed them on to savers. So I suppose that's where we're coming from. I started a conversation yesterday. Yep. It got quite a bit of interest. I am not a banker. I'm not in finance, so I don't know the ins and outs of it. But if, as a country, we've decided that windfall taxes, yes, it's something as a country we can do in the event of super profits being made, well, then why not start that conversation with banks? And if they keep doing this, well, then we'll introduce extra taxes or extra levies on them that'll bring money back to the customers. But my preference would be that they would start rewarding mortgage holders, that they would start rewarding savers, because you are the customer. You should be rewarded for the money that you give to the bank.
Can we expect to see Pádraig Tobin on the floor of the Dáil raising this issue in the coming weeks?
I would expect so, but what we can definitely expect to see is Pádraig Tobin will be in County Donegal at the end of this month. So, look, there is a lot of talk this morning about how the farmers and people in rural and regional Ireland are not happy with how the government is running things. Pádraig Tobin he'll be in Letterkenny in the Mount Argyll Hotel on Tuesday the 29th of August. So there are a number of issues that are going to be raised. We're going to be talking about possibly finance. We're going to be talking about the new curriculums in school. We're going to be talking about all different things, the issues that are important to people out there. So I just want to put out there and make sure, look, we have a lot of rural people here listening this morning. Their issues aren't being listened to by a large number of the cabinets. Remember when the cabinet was found and we looked at the maps and they showed all the counties where ministers were from? There wasn't many from the west of Ireland. I'm from the west of Ireland. And there's a lack of representation of people like you and your listeners. And we need to, and AIM 2, I believe, is a party that can speak for the rural Ireland.
An opportunity well taken. Eric, well done. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. You've started the debate, and we'll see where that debate goes. That's Eric Nelligan there. He's an AIM 2 representative addressing that issue. A few comments before we go for a break. Caller says, I was surprised yesterday to see the Taoiseach in Northern Ireland trying to get the unionists into power with Sinn Féin. Yet in the Republic, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil make it very clear they will not enter government here with them. Now, number one, I suspect there'll be some very pragmatic conversations after the next general election. Some very pragmatic conversations indeed, particularly, I suspect, between Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. And we'll have to wait and see what transpires with that. The other thing is there is a system in place in Northern Ireland which outlines a system of representation under De Hont, as it was called, which means that Sinn Féin have a right to be in government in Northern Ireland, and they have a right for Michelle O'Neill to be the First Minister based on the figures. And it's a slightly different thing. Now, I will add to that, I mean, in the event that Sinn Féin become a majority party and become the leading government party in a future administration in this country, and that is eminently possible after the next election, if Mary Lou MacDonald has the support, Mary Lou MacDonald will become Taoiseach, and Leo Varadkar, irrespective of his own political opinion, will, presumably in opposition, refer to Mary Lou O'Donnell as Taoiseach, and he will be bound by the democratic mandate to refer to her as Taoiseach, to give her the respect she deserves as Taoiseach, and to accept her as Taoiseach. And that's what Leo Varadkar will have to do in the event of that happening. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now we're going to go to Zoom and we're going to go to the twin towns of Ballybuffet and Stranorer. An initiative which has seen a group of local business owners get together has been formed under the banner of Stronger Together. And delighted to be joined on Zoom by Tracy Alexander, owner of Alexander's in Ballybuffet and a member of Stronger Together. Tracy, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you. Tracy, any initiative in any town to strengthen the voice of local business is going to be a welcome one. It's a particularly important one for the Twin Towns because there are a number of issues which are of huge importance to business in the Twin Towns at the moment. And I'm sure not least of those is going to be roadworks.
Yeah, well, we've had roadworks in the town there fairly recently, as I'm sure everybody knows. That all went actually very smoothly. The contractors involved were amazing. The road signage guys, I think I give a shout out to them before. I mean, they did an amazing job in keeping the traffic flowing. And actually, people in the town felt that the one-way system that they had set up was actually really good. Once you got used to it, took a bit of, you know, there's one day I went to the school to collect my daughter and I actually ended up being late because I forgot about the one-way system. But once you got into it, it was actually really good and everything flowed really well. So sort of on the horizon as well is the bypass for the town. So, you know, we're kind of used to that. But, you know, from a business point of view, it really does affect businesses big time.
There is also an issue in the Twin Towns with dereliction. And sadly, in many of the geodirectory surveys that are published, we see some of the highest levels of dereliction nationally, not least on Egal, but nationally as well. Some of the highest levels of dereliction are in Ballybuffet and Stranorer. And I'm sure that's something as local businesses you'd like to see tackled. We know the council has got derelict officers and staff who are specifically looking at this whole area. And, you know, you'll want to see them targeting the Twin Towns in particular, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we've actually been down that road already, Donal, and our Chamber of Commerce is located over in the base in Stranorner, our enterprise centre, and we have a manager there at the moment, Dean Gillespie, and Dean is great. You know, he's full of enthusiasm and get up and go, and he himself, and I think Leah Fairman, who was in the job before him as well, had sort of initiated this, but they have got the grant for painting derelict buildings. The town is looking amazing. I don't know if you've been up in Ballybuffet recently. When you come in there at McClay's Corner, that building has been painted on the corner on the right hand side. Glenfinn Street was an absolute eyesore. They've done that. They have hosed signs, they have weeded flower beds, they have painted buildings, they have done phenomenal work. And the workers from the CE scheme as well, who also come under that umbrella, you know, within the chamber and the base, they're fantastic. But I mean, the direction they have got from Dean has just been, we've been blown away with that. And another thing as well, actually, our Chamber of Commerce here in town, we have Councillor Patrick McGowan is on our chamber. And he is so knowledgeable with regard to, you know, what grants we need to apply for, you know, keeping us in the right direction from all that point of view as well. So that's been great. But no, we have applied for that grant. Ballybuffet has been really well spruced up. So we're delighted with it, you know. And from a business point of view as well, that's great. It will encourage people to stop more so when they're coming through the town, you know, if it looks that much better.
And that regeneration programme that's planned as well, a lot of the sketches and details, in fact, in mural form over at the old Baller, the old Ritz, I think it's probably called locally, it's called the old Ritz rather than the old Baller, which was always the Baller to me before it moved. But I mean, you know, there are very ambitious plans for the future in terms of regeneration and in terms of the car park and so on and so forth. So, I mean, from your point of view, both in the chamber context and in the Stronger Together context, you'll be taking centre stage in discussions on that to make sure that what happens with the knowledge and the support of the business community and happens in a way that benefits the local community.
Absolutely. And we've been involved in this already. And the regeneration project that's going to be amazing. You know, there's a lot in it and it's obviously going to take a while to get everything up and running, you know. But the part of that is a town park and just up at the back of the woods, which will be great. That's fantastic. The extra car parking, you know, all of that. And hopefully that'll bring extra business into the town. We actually had a new business started in town there just yesterday. I think they had their opening, a lovely boutique in the middle of the town, Cherry Blossom. And, you know, that's lovely to see a new business coming into the town. Very welcome from everybody. And, you know, it adds a bit of a buzz about the place as well, you know, whenever we have new business coming in.
And you've also got the most famous shop in Donegal, and possibly the most famous shop in the Western Northwest in McIlhenny's, and that's always been a draw. I mean, I remember my mother-in-law and sister-in-law were up with us for a couple of days, and before they were travelling back down south, we said, "Yeah, what do you want to do on your last day?" And they both said together, "McIlhenny's." So you know, you've got that there as well. So that's always going to be, you know, a draw to bring people in, and then maybe the challenge to yourself and others is to create an offering that attracts people that are in already for McIlhenny's, you know, to get them to spread out beyond McIlhenny's and go to other shops, other boutiques and other service providers.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say there that you brought them to Alexander's as well now, Donal. I hope you did.
I think they did drop in for an ice cream all right now.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed that recently, actually, at one of our Stronger Together meetings, you know. We're so blessed in the town. We have McIlhenny's, a huge draw to the town. We have three amazing hotels. We have the Ballor Theatre. We have the Fun Valley Centre. I mean, the amount of guests and people that come to the Fun Valley Centre is just beyond belief. You know, we have beautiful walks. We have the fishing. You know, there's loads. We have a great historical, or sort of a great history in the town as well. You know, so we have a historical walk coming up next week as well, as part of the Heritage Week. We've loads in the town to offer people, you know. But as you say, it's when people come up and they go to, for example, McIlhenny's, it's getting them then, you know, to go to the rest of the town as well. So that's one of our aims as well down the line.
Yep. In terms of, and you referenced the Fin Valley Centre, and certainly there's a lot of development there. There's the new Harp Stadium. So there is a lot of development taking place. Looking into the future, and you referenced this briefly at the start, the bypass that will be done as part of the 10T. Now, I was speaking to Councillor Patrick McGowan recently on the show. I say it was probably last year or the year before. And I reminded him of a conversation and a debate in the Donegal County Council Chamber some years ago. And I remember Councillor McGowan speaking very passionately about the Twin Towns bypass and about delays to it. And he finished a very impassioned contribution in the council chamber by saying, "Cathaoir, look, if we don't get this issue resolved, we mightn't get the bypass until 2010. I mean, that's, you know, and that was, that discussion took place in the early 2000s. I mean, as long, and I've been covering Donegal County Council meetings for 30 years plus. And it's been a topic of discussion at those meetings. Now, it does look like with the 10T, it's on the horizon, it is coming. It's going to be a game changer, whatever happens. There's an argument that says a bypass will take the through traffic away. I mean, if I'm driving to Sligo, I will be driving through Ballybofey and Stranraer. I'm not stopping, I'm not likely to stop because parking's going to be an issue, congestion is going to be an issue. If you can take all the traffic that's going straight to Donegal Town, straight to Sligo, straight to Galway, straight to wherever, if you can take all that out of the town, you can actually make the town a lot more pleasant to visit, a lot easier to park in. There is an argument that says a bypass, far from taking business out of the town, a bypass could bring business back in.
Absolutely, I totally agree with that. We had a meeting recently with the council, the county council, about parking in the town, and there was a big discussion about offering free parking on the main street. You know, but whenever we thrashed everything out with the council, they were so good and so knowledgeable because, I mean, this is their field, you know, and we had loads of questions from a business point of view. But when we thrashed everything out, there's no point in offering somebody free parking on the main street because we don't have any space. You know, Dean Gillespie, that guy I referred to over in the base, he actually went round the town and did up a map and drew out all the parking spaces that we have in Ballybofey. And I think it was maybe 83 along the main street, I think, of Ballybofey, you know, which isn't a huge amount. And then you take maybe people working in offices that maybe park there all day. You know, you can't offer free parking. You know, there's loads of reasons we can't offer free parking, basically. But the biggest one is that we don't have the space. But no, I totally agree with you that, you know, once the bypass comes, it'll free up the town. You know, if people want to stop, they can't stop anyway because there's nowhere to park. You know, and with the congestion in the town the way it is, you're so glad to actually get through it. Why would you stop?
In terms of the Stronger Together initiative, you've had, as you've said, a number of meetings. You're having a lot of discussion. Chamber, you believe, is more focused now than ever, more united now than ever, and Stronger Together, the name absolutely suggests that. You believe there is a bright future for the Twin Towns of Ballybofey and Stranraer. Chamber is going to be at the heart of that, isn't it?
Absolutely. The chamber has always been in existence, and we kind of felt that there's maybe four or five business people go to the chamber meetings regularly, and we go and we discuss St. Patrick's Day, we discuss Christmas lights, we discuss public toilets. We do all that, which all has to be done. It's an essential part of the chamber and the town. But we just felt there was something lacking. The business people were getting no return out of the chamber. We give up an hour out of our busy working day to go over and discuss the public toilets and the Christmas lights and everything, which, as I say, has to be done. But we weren't getting anything else back. So a few of us got together and we thought, we need to be giving something back to the businesses. We need to have more of a community. There's an amazing sense of community in the Twin Towns and always has been amongst the people. But for the business people, we were lacking that community. Paul Harkin, I think he is in Stronger Together as well, or he's in the chamber. And, he said when he came to business in Balbuffet initially, he found it very lonely. And being in business is actually a very lonely place to be. We have huge overheads. We have, you have problems every day, which people do anyway. It's not something to harp on about as such. But, you do have things that you would like to be able to discuss with somebody else. And we just felt that if we had a group that was, a welcoming business community, that we could all lean on each other and discuss these things with each other. We were really lacking that. So that's what we're trying to do.
A caller has said what's needed in Balibuffet is more retail shops. Now, you referenced the new boutique opened just this week, and hopefully we'll see more of that into the future. Tracy, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's great to see the initiative, and I think any initiative that comes from the community up always tends to be a successful one. Thanks indeed, as we said, and all the best with the initiative, and we look forward to seeing Balibuffet and Stranorer grow and grow.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank you, Tracy. Good morning. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We had our Heritage Week quiz earlier on. We gave that a few mentions. The three clues pertaining to a building in Letterkenny. I was built and completed in July 2007. And initially, I'm the RCC. The answer was, of course, Regional Cultural Centre. And our winners are Tara Scanlon in Convoy and Karen Conaghan in Rathdonnell, Letterkenny. Both of you win that Heritage Week quiz. Well, the Heritage Ireland voucher worth in the region of €90 and worth much more depending on how much use you give to it. Now, one of the big news stories of this year has been the retained firefighters strike, and that strike is set to be escalated. SIPTU has confirmed that move in response to what they say is the government's failure to respond to the service's legitimate concerns. As of 8 a.m. on Saturday, all stations will go dark and will have no internal communications other than life-saving information. And there may be further escalation in the future. Joined on the line by Kevin McKinney, who's the SIPTU representative in Donegal. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Donald, to your listeners.
Kevin, this obviously is a place you did not want to be. Thus far, you're not getting the response you want from Dara O'Brien and his colleagues in government. Is this a way of saying to Dara O'Brien, look, you're not going to fob us off this time, we're serious?
That's correct, Donald. That's been going on far too long. These talks with management have been going on now for at least 5-6 years. And before that, but trying seriously to talk to government and deal with the issue. I think the important thing here is that even Dara O'Brien did instruct the National Directorate for Fire and Emergency Management to actually carry out a review of the service, because the major issue is that it goes to the heart of what the problem is recruitment and retention. And when you look at recruitment and retention, people talk about money only. And they talk about, the fire service are only looking for money. That's not true. It's a particular narrative that's been expressed. The issue really is that in order to recruit people, you've got to pay them a reasonable wage. And to retain them as well, that wage needs to also give them a work-life balance. And when you look at what's expected of a retained firefighter, and I know I've repeated this many, many times, the issue for them is they work 24/7. Some stations are below crewing levels. That makes them unsafe to work and deal with the public and deal with the incidents that come about. And as you know, Donald, there's been some horrific examples of that here in Donegal. And if you look at some of the work that our retained fire service here locally have done, it's absolutely amazing. And it cannot be underestimated, the value that they give to their communities.
Kevin, what are the implications, Kevin, of stations going dark? I mean, it sounds very foreboding, as it were. What are the practical implications of what happens on Saturday?
Well, what it means is, we're currently a third of our stations are on strike on a rotational basis, and we are strategic in the way that we've done that so as that we can respond to incidents. From this weekend, we will move into 50%. We're in the middle of a meeting here today, and we will move to the 50%, which actually means when you look at Donegal, we have 15 stations, and we will be reducing it down to 7, which will be on call. And when we talk about this going dark, it's to do with the communication with camp. When the pager goes off, a station is alerted accordingly. Wherever the incident is in the local station will be notified. And the communication is all by radio and so forth. So there is communication between camp and between management and the station officer on the ground and the fire crew on the ground. What will happen there is all those communications will be on a need-by basis and by phone. As you can understand and appreciate, that the staff are highly trained and well capable of dealing with incidences, but they do sometimes need assistance from other stations. So this leads into the difficulty here at the moment, and we talk about what is the contingency plan that needs to be put in place by the council, which hasn't been in place as we speak, or at least it's not to my satisfaction, and I don't believe it satisfies Section 3 of the Industrial Relations Act 1990, the Code of Practice piece.
So Gary Martin and his officials have work to do, as well as Dara O'Brien and government and cabinet.
Absolutely. Well, the responsibility of Donegal County Council at the moment is to put a contingency plan in place. I'll give you an example, Donald. And we know the horrific incident that took place in Chrysler. And what I can tell you is, from a pragmatic point of view and a response point of view, there were 6 stations alerted to that incident within the county, and one from the north. That meant that we had 6 stations unable to respond to further incidences. That meant that some plan had to be put in place to counteract that so that we would have the cover. So what Donegal County Council did was mobilise individual stations to be able to respond in the event of. Well, now we have a situation where we have 6 or 7 stations and 8 stations going to that will be off, will be in strike, which is our right. And Donegal County Council have no plan in place.
Yeah.
At least you would do, if you were managing it, is put other stations on standby. Now, why will they not do that? Fundamentally, it's because of cost. When you have to put stations on standby, you have to pay for it. And it's a cost, and they don't want to do that. And they've been given an instruction from the local government management agency, which is LGMA, not to do anything other than business as usual in order to thwart the strike.